Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yaya Toure, good-looking ball, Zabaleta! Palmed it in! It's over the line! Manchester City! Season, and what a time to score it! Oh, now then, Cisse's in behind, can change it, one chance, equalises! What a moment that is! Is that a lifesaver for Queen's Park Rangers? Can he get the cross right? He might do! Oh, Queen's Park Rangers have taken the lead! It's Jamie Mackie! Can you believe this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Jonathan Wilson is opposite me as always. And today we welcome Flo Lloyd Hughes to the podcast, sports journalist and broadcaster. Flo, lovely to have you here.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, Flo, you've gone for the momentous occasion on the final day of the 2011-12 Premier League season when Manchester City beat Queen's Park Rangers 3-2 to clinch the title with that late Sergio Aguero goal. But you are a QPR fan, so why have you gone for this game?
So, I went for this game because, as a football fan, I just think it's one of the most incredible games of football that's ever happened. I also was there, so I think from an occasion point of view, as an away fan, it was really special. I also think things happened in that game that were just so ridiculous, that there's so many elements to it, there's so many threads. I was just saying to Jonathan before we started about actually what happened at the Stoke Bolton game as well was quite mad. So as a kind of end to that season, it was a fitting sort of chaotic tribute, I guess. And I also think the chaos kind of sums up the last decade for QPR, a very weird and chaotic kind of silly decade for them as a club. So I think it's quite a nice kind of roundup. And I think it was something that, being a fan there, that I've never experienced, which is actually a shared joy. Because in football, you know, to put it as a cliche, there's a winner and a loser, right? But because of that result and because of what happened elsewhere, actually at the end of the day, everyone won. And it was an experience that I'd never seen in football. And maybe in Germany, where there's not, you know, as much kind of nasty segregation in some stadiums, and maybe it's a little bit friendlier.
Or the Putney end at Fulham.
The neutral stand at Fulham. You might not have this, but actually in the away end, at the final whistle, the security just marched off. They just let the, because you know, it's at the Etihad, they had that weird, it's the same stand, but they just have security guards standing in between you, which seems like a ridiculous, silly kind of, you know, I don't know why you do that, because you're just asking for trouble, especially at a derby game. But yeah, they just all just marched off and just thought, well, these both sets of fans are having a wicked time. No one's too angry. Let's just let them hang out and party together. Mm. And that was why I came away thinking, God, that was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, one can forget, actually, in that game, obviously, that we remember it for the Martin Tyler commentary, a phenomenal end to the season. Unless, of course, you're a Manchester United fan. First time, I think, the Premier League had been decided on goal difference, blah, 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 blah. But QPR did play their part in that game. You know, one can forget that, you know, if they hadn't have dug in, scored the two goals and so on and so forth. I mean, it was an incredible day. I actually watched that game in Hammersmith in West London with a load of QPR fans. And I remember coming out. I know what you mean by the sort of spectacle. I came out of the pub and I had a bit of a headache. And I think it's maybe the only time, maybe one or two other times that that's happened because of just the intensity, the whole occasion. It was just, it was something else, Jonathan, you know, that end of the season. I mean, we've had some good ends of the season. I remember we spoke about on the podcast previously about Blackburn going to Liverpool and Manchester United, obviously. But the last day of the Premier League season for drama, this is up there.
Well, and the number of things that had to happen to get to that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, people talk about Aguero's goal. Mm. Let me put it to you that the moment when Manchester City won that title was 80 minutes into their home game against Sunderland.
Sunderland, he always manages.
When Martin O'Neill took off Matthew Kilgallen for Sotiris Kyriakos.
Yeah.
And Sunderland squandered a 3-1 lead to draw 3-3.
Yeah.
And if City hadn't got that point, wouldn't have mattered.
Wouldn't have mattered, you see.
So, I mean, City had that, yeah, they were in a good position going into the March. They had that big wobble in the March where they lost at Swansea. They went out of the Europa League and away goals to Sporting. They drew against Stoke. They had 3-3 against Sunderland. Then they lost 1-0 at Arsenal. The game where Balotelli should have been sent off in the first half, mm-hmm. eventually managed to get himself sent off in the second half. And it just seemed like City had been City again, that everything had collapsed.
Yeah.
And at that point, United were 8 points clear.
With six games to go.
Yeah. And United, although they'd lost a lead similar to that in 97-8 to Arsenal, their reputation was of ruthless winners who don't lose.
It was
leads.
Ferguson's Man United, yeah. Lest we forget.
Well, it still was in 97-8, but somehow
their reputation had...
And also, in the ground that day, actually, speaking of kind of like, you know, City, you know, collapsing a little bit, they were playing this montage, and I just, if I was the kind of video/PA team, I'd say, why are you doing that? And it was this clock ticking down all the years till the title.
Oh, my goodness.
Dun, dun, dun. And I was thinking, what are you doing? No, no, yeah. This is a terrible idea. And when I was watching back the game yesterday, there's clips of fans absolutely losing it, like ripping off their shirts, throwing them down on the floor. There was a guy crying when QPR went 2-1 up, crying his eyes out, and his dad like cuddling him. And you just thought, oh my word, you know, they set themselves up for that. I mean, what it must have been like to be a City fan, yeah. And kind of witnessing your team completely collapse on the edge of something you've been waiting for so long was just baffling.
And especially to lose it to them.
Well, absolutely. But we say this, we've mentioned this in previous podcasts and so on, that when you think a job's done and you go out, because that clock ticking, they think it's done. All yeah. they got to do is beat QPR, who only just survived by the skin of their teeth. Like, wait till you're over the line, for crying out loud. Yeah. How many more and examples so do is, you
they,
need?
They had the title won by the beginning of March. They chucked it away.
Yes.
They then won six games in a row, yeah. including beating United.
Yeah, company
1-0
header.
With the company header, the third last game of the season. So that game really should have been, you know, the game that we talk about today as being the critical moment when City went from being, you know, incredibly wealthy but haven't done anything to being champions. We shouldn't be talking about this game that we are talking about. We should be talking about that company header and the 1-0 win. That should be the game.
Absolutely.
But they're City, so they can't do it like that. Yeah. They have to try and mess it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And all credit to them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when they beat Manchester United in the semi-final in the previous FA Cup, which of course they went on to win, a lot of Man City fans said, oh, that was the moment when we really threw the shackles off. Well, had they not have beaten QPR, I actually think the shackles would have probably remained.
If Matthew Kilgallen had stayed on the pitch.
And it's always worth remembering that moment, of course. But what about QPR themselves? Because, you know, they were in a relegation fight. Neil Warnock was in charge at the start of the season until January, and then Mark Hughes came in. And it wasn't a particularly sort of happy place, was it, really? And there was, well, as I say, they only survived by the skin of their teeth. And they'd previously been promoted, of course, to the Premier League. What was the mood at Queen's Park Rangers?
You know, it was a bit of a strange one because in the lead up to that game, we'd actually been on a weird run of beating good clubs. And even in the home fixture against City, we only lost 3-2. So we had previous kind of good form against the big clubs.
I remember that. It was quite a good battle game.
The other game I was going to choose was that 3-2 against Liverpool where Jamie Mackey scored in kind of the 90th minute or whatever, and we won 3-2. So weirdly, Hughes, although I wasn't, you know, I don't think any QPR fan is particularly pleased with his reign at the club, and that's mainly for other reasons, classic reasons in football where, you know, a manager's agent signs all the other players into his group, whatever. That's aside, that's another podcast. It was more, you know, weirdly, he managed to get the players up for the big games. We got good results against Arsenal, got good results against Spurs. We beat Chelsea. There were weird things that happened. But yeah, we then didn't really necessarily perform against the big clubs. But looking back at that squad in the game is quite hilarious. I mean, you've got the Jibril Cissés, the Sean Wright Phillips. I mean, it's a bit of a who's who of,
I know what you mean,
mid-table Premier League players.
Not necessarily the players you'd want for a relegation scrap.
No. I mean, Cissé, when he came, he actually, you know, he scored some good and important goals for us. A very important one against Stoke. And he did his old kind of classic backflip. But yeah, it was a strange time. And I think QPR fans felt like we were heading towards the inevitable. And we obviously managed to hold on for one more season, but actually it was a bit of a pointless kind of situation. But I guess we cashed in on that, but it didn't really matter because we've still got FPP to deal with. But yeah, it was a strange season. And I think that's why this game kind of...
They've been a basket case of a club, really, in those sort of kind of years. But going into that match on the last day of the season, when you think about the other sides who were down there, was it...
Well, they were 2 points clear of Bolton. They were the two key teams. I mean, I guess Villa could have got dragged into it. But
And then looking at, you know, we're 2 points clear, but we've got to go to City.
Well, that's the
point. And Bolton are going to Stoke, right?
Yeah. So obviously Blackburn and Wolves went down with Bolton. But surely QPR fans must have thought, you know, Stoke have to, and of course that's the way it worked out, Stoke have to do them a favour. But really, as a QPR fan, you must have thought, this might be the last time, maybe for a while, I might see my team in the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely. But then I still had that sort of faith of, but the thing is, we've got good results against big clubs this season. And we've got Jamie Mackey, the man who never gives up. I mean, it's ridiculous, the energy. He's like a little puppy, he just runs around everywhere. And at one point you did kind of believe, actually, you know, this is it. This is kind of the destiny of us fulfilling the prophecy of stopping City winning the title, which I never kind of thought. But yeah, the whole game, when you just watch it back, it just flips and flops in such a strange way. You know, got Paddy Kenny in goal, kind of a Warnock favourite, won our player of the season in the promotion year, which is ridiculous because Adel Taarabt didn't win it. Don't ask me why QPR fans did that. But you got Paddy Kenny there, who makes that terrible mistake for the Zabaleta goal, which weirdly, until I watched it back yesterday, I didn't realise it was actually Zabaleta's only goal of the season. Yeah. Was that goal he scored that day.
No, he was a weirdly potent attacking threat in this game. Yeah. It was like the first hour he has the three best chances to see.
So Paddy Kenny starts the game quite well, concedes the Zabaleta goal where he just pushes it into his own net.
Yeah.
Then goes on to actually have a really, really good game. Like keeps out some really strong chances from Aguero, Balotelli, Silva. I mean, he's pulling them out of nowhere. Then obviously Cissé gets that goal. Jolyon Lescott header. Lescott's been pretty solid all season. So you're like, oh, wow, this is really unravelling then if Lescott's the one making the mistakes.
Yeah.
Maybe this, you know, people are just being overwhelmed by the occasion, the tension, the pressure, whatever.
But I mean, those images you talk about, the City fans, you know, in tears.
Yeah.
And just loads of pictures of them, so, you know, just sort of head in hands. That anxiety must... I mean, I know there's a team full of you know, star players who've won things all over the place, but that anxiety must transmit itself to the pitch.
And it clearly did in the performance
of
the team.
You can hear it in the crowd. The tension is just huge.
I mean, they hadn't won the league since 1968. Yes, they'd won the FA Cup in the previous season, which was their first major silverware since the 1970s. But there was still a nervousness. There was still that in the Champions League, because I think they went out in the group stages. They finished third, I think, in the Champions League. They still have an odd relationship with the Champions League, despite Guardiola's kind of best efforts, I suppose, and being in a semi-final. But you're right. I mean, I still cannot believe that clock that you spoke about at the start of the game. It was absolutely baffling. Such a kind of inferiority complex, for obvious reasons, for so many years with Manchester United. It all nearly came crashing down on this final day. We'll go into more detail. We'll have a quick break and we'll go into more detail in the match, so bear with us. We'll be back in a sec.
From their right back, Shevko equalises! What do you know about this? Still time, just...
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Now then, let's go more into detail about the game. So, when it started, were the City fans in good voice to begin with, or were they nervous from the start?
I think it was nervousness on both sides because there was so much at stake.
Yeah,
which is quite rare, I think, these days. I mean, I think that's definitely the best title race we've had in a while. Mm. And I remember it was so vividly, like our whole trip there, because we drove up. My brother and I shared the driving. We drove up in the 2001 VW Lupo that we had, that my brother had already nearly written off once, and my mum had like patched together with bits and pieces. Like the bumper, I'd knocked off once, and we just got cable ties and cable tied it back on.
Yeah.
And it was this tiny little sort of metal car that on the motorway you could feel the whole side shake. Anyway, so there were four of us packed up in there, driving to Manchester. I think we must have left at like 8 o'clock in the morning or something. We managed to park in the city centre. Can't remember how or why we managed to get a good space.
They probably just thought it was a derelict car.
Someone just abandoned their vehicle.
No, don't give a ticket. They're not going to see that.
And it was really funny because we'd gone to a lot of away games that season because I was in my last year of school and my brother was at uni, I think. So we both had a lot of spare time on our hands. And we'd spent the whole season getting the under 16 tickets. Mm. And we'd got away with it every single ground in the country until we got to the Etihad.
Uh-huh.
and the security guard was having none of it. So I was 18 at the time, my brother was 20, and we marched along in our under 16 tickets. You know, I think they were a tenner. So for a Premier League, it's like, well, you've got to get that. Maybe 20, I can't quite remember. But anyway, we handed it to security guard and he looked at it and thought, nah. None of you are under 16. Apart from me, he'd let me in. I was with my brother's friends. So they were about similar age, 20 and 21. So I was like, oh, shall I wait for you guys or shall I just go in? So I just went in anyway, left them. They had to queue up and pay. They missed like the first 10 minutes of the game because they had to queue up and pay the difference I think it was like another tenner or something. Right. So the security guard was having none of it and said, you guys are under 16. You've got to go and pay the difference. Because he said, did you have any ID? And they were like, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was in there standing on my own. I had Five Live in my ear, trying to keep up with the other game, like, oh God, are they ever going to come in? Am I going to spend the rest of the game trying to make friends with these people around me? They eventually turn up and it was just, yeah, it was just so tense. There was nervous energy and excitement everywhere. But it wasn't hostile, which I think is something quite rare in football. It was kind of like, you know, if things work out, maybe we can all have fun.
I guess. I see what you mean. Well, and so, I mean, the first half was fairly...
Well, the most significant incident of the first half happens in Sunderland.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney puts United ahead at Sunderland, which then means that City are, the table as it stands, are 2 points behind.
Mm-hmm. That was a relevant mention for Sunderland there, you see.
I don't know. But seriously, that Matt Kilgallen moment. There's an Athletic article in that.
Is there? I've no doubt there
it's
is.
Like, it's like the, Kevin Bacon, you're never... whatever it is from Kevin Bacon in Hollywood.
Six degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's never 6 degrees of Sunderland.
Well, around Jonathan, you know. So yes, Wayne Rooney puts Manchester United 1-0 up. And that adds to the tension, of course.
And at this point, Bolton, I think, are 2-1 up.
Right.
And then we enter the second
half. Well, I mean, the Bolton game is worth... we should talk about that. Let's talk about it now. So the opening goal, which puts Stoke ahead there, it really shouldn't stand.
No, there were some dodgy goals in that game.
So John Walters absolutely clatters into Adam Bogdan, ball's bundled in. 95 times out of 100 it's given as a foul.
Yeah.
So Stoke have the lead. Bolton come back and you have a 2-1 up by half time. But the two goals, there's a clearance that hits, can't remember who it is, and loops in.
There were a couple of freak accidents.
And Kevin Davis sort of bundles one in after that. So I think it's got twice in the last 5 minutes before half time. So at half time, United are winning and Bolton are winning.
Yeah.
Which means that the result at the Etihad is not good for either.
No.
City or QPR.
Well, but Man City were 1-0 up at half time, though.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Because Zabaleta obviously scored.
It's 5 minutes before half time.
Well, I mean, that Zabaleta goal was really the only sort of moment to talk about in the first half. And as you say, the first goal of the season seems quite odd. When that went in, I remember thinking, oh, Man City, that is exactly what you want. Just, a few minutes or whatever it was, just before half-time.
And it's such an odd goal.
It's an odd goal.
I still can't quite work out what happened.
Yeah, but you take it, don't you? And I thought to myself, that's gutting for QPR, but Man City will breathe a huge sigh of relief and surely now.
And I did think, oh, that's opened the floodgates. It's going to be like 4 or 5.
Exactly, that should relax
them. That's how that kind of game works.
Yeah,
right? We've
exactly,
all seen it.
Indeed we have.
Because QPR would have to come out and attack and that leaves space in behind.
Yeah. Sure. So we get into the second half and no more goals at Sunderland, of course, as would be the case. I can't really remember much before... Cissé scores, if there were sort of chances or anything like that.
Well, there's the Aguero chance of a near post where Kenny makes a decent save.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Sort of clears it off the line a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So again, surely if the second one had gone in, then you would think, okay, that plays out. But it didn't go in.
And that Cissé goal was extremely lucky. I mean, Sean Wright Phillips just sticks out foot, gets a hopeful kick on it. Then Lescott tries to... kind of header it, but headers it back towards his own goal. And then Cissé runs onto it and does a classic, emphatic Cissé strike.
Yeah.
And I think there was just a bit of a moment of silence where people didn't really realise what had happened and thought, oh my word, we've actually scored a goal in this game.
Yeah. Oh, it took everybody by surprise. Yeah. I mean, even the fans in the pub I was with, they couldn't believe it. And then, of course, and Mark Hughes as well must be thinking, do you know what? If I can screw my old club over, handing the title to one of his other previous clubs, I'm sure he would have enjoyed that. But yes, he says,
of course, If you want another relevant Sunderland mention.
I do.
He was sacked during a 4-3 win over Sunderland.
There you are, you see. All roads lead to Sunderland. So yes, it's 1-1. And what's the mood in the away end then? You're thinking, hang on a minute, there might be something in this for us.
Yeah,
well, the draw kept you up on goal difference, didn't it?
Yeah, the issue being we then would have to hold on for, this is about 50 minutes, so a pretty long time to hold out against a team that's very good and trying to win the title.
True enough.
And then all hell breaks loose when Joey Barton loses the plot.
Well, but I mean, there's a lot of City pressure even before that.
Yes, Hill
nearly heads a Nasri crossing his own net.
Yeah.
There's a Zabaleta shot that sort of hits Aguero about 6 yards out and he can't quite.
They were
react
pushing and pushing and pushing. It was an onslaught.
And keep on getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And then, yeah, Barton.
I mean, what on earth? Like, words fail me, quite frankly.
I know. And also, I don't think, watching it back, I remember in the stadium, it looked so much worse than on the cameras.
Oh, right, okay.
Because in the stadium, it just looked like he was throwing arms at everyone, whereas in the clips, it just looked, he elbows Tevez and kicks out Aguero. But I remember looking at it and just watching him throwing arms at everyone and trying to tackle everyone. And basically, it was this kind of thought of, well, if I'm going down, I'm taking you all with me.
Oh, it was a bit Scarface.
Yeah, it was that, you know.
But, I mean, he himself has said he was... Once he realised he'd been caught for the elbow on Tevez, which is a really nasty, right on the throat of Tevez, his idea was, I'll try and provoke one of them to come on off with me.
Yeah.
And also that Tevez elbow was completely pointless because Tevez didn't even have the ball at the time.
Mm. He was way off the ball.
He was trying to stop the run. Linesman. Yeah, on the other side. That's how obvious it was.
It reminds me of when John Terry was sent off for Chelsea at the Nou Camp.
Again, for the kneeing Sanchez.
Yes. Yeah. But they obviously went through. Was that the game when Torres scored at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that game, yeah. When you thought to yourself, what on earth are you doing? Because as you say, so pointless. It's not like it was, Valverde for Real Madrid or something.
Oh, it wasn't even, just a high ball where
the
opportunity's there.
Exactly. It's weird. I mean, it's very Joey Barton thing to do, of all players.
Extremely unprofessional.
And if there's any referee you're not going to get away with that with, it is Mike Dean.
Yeah. Dino, he'll have you on that.
Damn right he will, and as he should do. But I remember just looking at it in disbelief, going, you blithering idiot, you've just got 1-1. There's something here. Man City, we know the tensions and so on and so forth. And the QPR fans that I was sat with in the pub, they're just like, what the hell are you playing at, man? You know, I mean, I suppose that would have been the vibe in the away end.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe they were used to it.
Barton is, by his nature, a divisive character, and lots of fans liked him and lots of fans didn't. I think the problem with Joey Barton, he was an unreliable player. Sometimes he was, fantastic, and also he had a reputation. So even when he didn't necessarily do the worst things, that reputation, carried with him the whole of his career, and he did get sent off for a few things that he shouldn't have got sent off for. So in that way, it was a classic Barton way to kind of, throw away everything a little bit. And it was really frustrating. And then he went on to get banned for 12 games and moved to Marseille, and we didn't even really see him again.
Yeah.
So obviously that happens. And then City go on to have more and more chances.
Well, there's a really incredible save from Kenny. Aguero's no more than, 5 yards out? And okay, it's not the hardest strike. But Kenny somehow manages to kind of scramble back and grab it on the line.
I mean, it could have been 5-1 if Kenny hadn't have pulled out some of the saves he had.
I'm still not sure. I think Tevez probably is offside in the build-up to that, but because it's Tevez who sort of knocks it down for Aguero. And I can't see how he isn't offside, but there's no VAR, so...
Yeah.
And this is when things start to really turn, which is when Mackie gets that goal. And Traoré, who'd been terrible for QPR all season. I mean, some of the players we got, like I said, it was a bit of a who's who. We had Traoré, we obviously had Wright Phillips and Cissé and all these, Anton Ferdinand. It's a very strange team. Taiwo, that very random Serie A Nigerian defender who actually played quite well for QPR. But anyway, Traoré just goes on this ridiculous run.
I'd call it a gallop.
Yeah. And he was really known for his pace in his career, but I never saw it until that day.
Yeah.
Because that's what he sort of came in for. And then puts in the best ball I've seen him put in all season. And then Jamie Mackey, in a kind of classically Mackey style, it's not a nice finish. He heads it into the ground, and it bounces up.
It's a bit of a torpedo style header, if I remember correctly. And when that went in,
it's a classic of its time, because
disbelief.
Sort of like the keeper, and I think it's Zabaleta running back.
Yeah, it would have been that side.
You know, a converging. It just goes between them and sort of bounces through and over them. And it sort of goes into the roof of the net because he had it so downwards, it's bounced up.
Uh-huh. And that actually helped because it was so hard to read for Joe Hart because it was like whoop and then so high. And that's on 66 minutes. So there's still quite a long time left.
Well, when that goal goes in, you think City have bottled it. It was one of those moments in football when something happens, you think, oh my goodness, this is happening.
And that's when on the broadcast footage, the tears. Yeah. It's just tears everywhere, everywhere.
Oh,
people
turned the water works
throwing their shirts every. I mean,
they know what the history of City is for 35 years.
But this
is it again.
Staring down the barrel of City fans thinking, are we seriously going to throw it away? All we need to do, having got ourselves in this incredible position, is beat Queen's Park Rangers, not a great Queen's Park Rangers team, as we've discussed, on the last day at home. Just win. So we've got to do, and then you are Premier League champions. And not only are they not going to win the game, they're going to lose the game. Like I don't know if they'd have ever recovered from that.
And then it's double joy because a goal goes in at the Britannia. Yeah. So now it's 2-2 in that Stoke Bolton game.
Yeah.
So as fans, we couldn't believe it because we just celebrated the most ridiculous goal.
Yeah.
You know, in the club's kind of 2000s history,
the most unlikely goal as well.
And then we then hear this goal's gone in the Britannia. Yeah. And we're going absolutely ballistic.
Yeah.
While the City fans, and I was on the edge of, you know, the barricade, as it were, are bawling their eyes out about where you're sitting here, Mark. It's like so close to me. And it's that mad kind of, you know, highs and lows of football and why we obviously all love it. And then comes another onslaught of City attacking. We've got 25 minutes of normal time left. And Balotelli comes on. Edin Dzeko comes on.
Yeah, so
on,
playing four up front.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this season with Liverpool. Liverpool are clearly going to win the title, but they're going to win it in April.
Yeah.
And it's going to, in a sense, it's going to be anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 30 years of kind of struggle and failure.
But were they not enjoying like the victory parade?
Yeah, maybe. There is a sort of processional aspect to it.
Yes.
And maybe you do enjoy that. But is it the same as a cathartic release to say Arsenal had an 89 when, you know, 18 years after their previous title, they win it again? Or City here 44 years after the previous title? Yes.
It was, 1968. Yeah, but of course one can't pick and choose these things.
You can't, but I just sort of
for your nerve's sake and for your grey hair,
in the narrative of the club, they really, in terms of facing your own demons, your own capacity to mess it up, to actually mess it up in the key game, still get away with it.
But is it not quite poetic the way, you know, we are going to, I mean, we're talking as if Liverpool have won the league because they've pretty much won.
Yeah, this is going to be a collector's item of fate.
Yeah. But
we
Liverpool.
Put this one out quickly.
But Liverpool are not really, they're not bottlers though, like Man City would have. Man City were the inferior side quite distinctly in the city, whereas Liverpool are the bigger side in their city. And they, you know, they have won trophy. I mean, Champions League against Milan, you know, there's their kind of,
that's true. But it's just in terms of thinking of a moment that is when the wait ended. I mean, maybe they'll look back at the 4-0 win at Leicester or something. I don't know.
Mm.
But it's a different. I mean, I guess it's sort of having come so close last season, it would have been very easy for that to weigh down on them. And they haven't. They've just sort of picked themselves up and kept going. And maybe that is the catharsis, but
yeah, I know what you mean.
I think for City, this was a healthy thing in terms of dealing with their own.
But I think the release for Liverpool is if they do, you know, go as you say with this, we could sound like absolute idiots to come in and say, but if they do go on this, you know, win it in April or something, I think they will bask in that. Yeah, we're the biggest team and we're going round and we're the champions, because I think that's what they want. Whereas Man City, this is more suited to them. You think, oh, they're going to bottle it. And it's like England winning a penalty shootout or something. Oh, my goodness, we can't believe we won a penalty shootout. So, back to the game itself. I mean, so QPR, I think that's why I ended up leaving that pub with a headache, because of the emotions being thrown around so forcibly when the QPR fans have that euphoric moment and they're looking at themselves thinking, this could be one of the greatest results in our history, or modern history, you could argue. But then, of course, City start throwing on the forwards, they start coming forward. And you must have been bricking it.
Yeah. Like when we said there was four up front, I did think, I thought it was, I did sort of think it might be 2-2.
Mm.
I thought they were going to score, but I didn't think.
I mean, you'd have settled for 2-2 before the game.
Yeah, I would have settled for 2-2. And actually, it doesn't really work as a podcast, but I don't know if you guys want to put it out on social media. My brother lives in the States now, but I messaged him and said, have you got any kind of stuff from the game, any pictures or anything? And he sent me a bunch of pictures. I've got some funny ones of me, like, having the time of my life, but also a picture of the scoreboard that we took a picture of at 2-1.
Oh, no.
Thinking, man, that was mad.
Yeah.
Like, in the context of this. And I also forgot until I watched the game that actually there was confetti, a bit like the ticking clock, there was confetti on the pitch already at the start of the game, because I don't know if it was the fans or the club, I can't quite remember, had chucked something. So they were already playing with a bunch of confetti on the field, which is also kind of like, you know, you're creating your own downfall there a little bit.
Yeah.
So then 5 minutes of added time, which...
Well, and they had been pretty relentless pressure.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's been another really good save.
But to hold out till 90 minutes.
Well, absolutely.
Tevez header.
But you think to yourself, Man City have to score soon.
Yeah.
And then once it gets to injury time, you think 2 goals in injury time. I'm not sure about that. I think they've blown it. And of course, Manchester United, they only won 1-0, but that's all they needed. And you thought, honestly, I was sitting there thinking, I cannot believe they've stuffed this up against 10-man QPR.
Yeah,
10
men.
This is beyond embarrassing. This will destroy the psyche of this club.
There was another great Kenny save, the Balotelli header save.
Yes,
it was
immediately before the equaliser. Yeah. It's in injury time. So City have started just putting corners into the six-yard box. Kenny's not coming for them, which maybe you would question. I mean, that's obviously not the time to question it. But yeah, there's the Balotelli header from one from the left, which he makes a great save from. Dzeko's put a chance just earlier into the side netting where
it's like one of those from half
a ground would have thought it had gone in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's from that Kenny save, they have the corner from the other side.
Yeah.
And Dzeko scores. And that was at 91-17.
Yeah.
And there's 5 minutes of injury time.
Yeah. And do you know what watching it back really annoyed me is that kickoff that QPR do, and Jay Boothroyd's on the pitch now, lesser known Jay Boothroyd. I think he went to China for a bit, but I've no idea what he's up to now.
Did he play for Perugia as well?
Yeah, he's definitely been around. Anyway, he decides to, from the kickoff, just boot it right into the corner.
Disastrous.
And Joe Hart ends up taking a throw in, and then obviously they build up the play. And I just thought, why are you doing that? I mean, that is wasting 3 seconds.
Well, he could have knocked it back and wasted 20 seconds.
Knocked it back a little bit and even pass it all the way back to Kenny, who then boots it. And you wasted, 30 seconds to a minute. I mean, it's just idiotic.
I saw that.
Idiotic.
But it's that moment, actually, because when City scored the second, in my mind, it was almost, as with some Man City fans, like it was almost like a consolation. It was like, well, at least we didn't lose the bloody game. And I'm sure some would have been like, come on, last few minutes. But that situation could have been managed better by QPR. And you're right, that moment where he just lumps it up the pitch, that is essentially going, right, you have it, and bring it on again.
It's inviting them to attack with what the tools they have for
madness.
Another minute and a half.
Just for, at least, as you say, John, for 20, 30 seconds, try, probably can't, but try at least take a ounce of sting out of the whole situation. And that was just a bit like, yeah, go on then, more fuel to your fire, which of course, you know.
I mean, and the other thing you can do then, so the QPR fans were behind the goal where the two QPR goals were.
Yeah.
So if you could somehow work a position where you can belt it into the QPR fans, that
they
kills 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Even if a ball boy chucks another ball on, chuck that ball back on, two balls on the pitch, you've got to stop it.
Yep.
Yeah. I know, it was really, really stupid. And I know in the commentary they noted that some City fans had left, you know, before the added time even went up. And I'm sure none of them would mention it, but I would love to meet a City fan who left after that and was like banging on the door to get back in, because that is, I mean, teaching never to leave before the final whistle. But
blimey.
Yeah, and then, you know, what happens.
Indeed, yeah. Well, the famous moment, of course, where... Balotelli sort of just about squeezes on the edge of the box.
And actually, do you know what was really weird, which I thought about, is Sami Nasri makes a huge mistake, because after Boothroy boots it out, Joe Hart takes the throw in. I think Zabaleta then plays it a little bit. Sean Wright-Phillips intercepts. it hits a City player, but Nasri thinks it's come up a QPR player, so he lets it go out, and QPR end up having a throw-in.
Oh, yeah.
And this is like, you know, 93-something. And then, like, I remember the commentary was something, oh, and Nasri leaves it out, lets it go out, but he shouldn't have. And then, obviously, QPR take a terrible throw-in, and then City turn over the ball, and then, obviously, you know, what happens?
That just, yeah, when you have a season of... It was 38 games long, and it all comes down to that moment. It's almost like with cricket, and you know, when it all comes down to the final ball, you know, just a cricket World Cup final. It's so absorbing, and it's just when it's on a knife edge, and that scramble around the QPR box where the people are throwing their bodies in the way, Balotelli's trying to jinx it in, and so on. Goodness knows what Manchester United fans would have been doing watching that, you know. And it, can they squeeze it? And of course they do, and it breaks to Aguero, and he makes no mistake with that one.
Aguero, there's a really, really interesting interview with him where he says that when Balotelli came on, he sort of said to Balotelli, look, stay near me and we'll play a 1-2. That's the only way it's going to work with four of us on the pitch.
Yeah,
we've got to stay close together. And he said Balotelli, you know, he had never had any idea whether Balotelli was listening to him, whether he even understood him. Because Balotelli was just blank. And he played that ball into Balotelli, made the run, and said he was even thinking, is this idiot going to actually give it back to me? And then it's Balotelli's only assist of the season.
Yeah. And remarkable.
There were a lot of firsts in that game, weren't there? It's weird.
Yeah.
And it all came together in the end.
Aguero, you know, and then it goes, and it's just, that's it. Really, the tide shifts. I know Manchester United then win the league, you know, Ferguson's the last season.
And that's what's mad, is there's that footage of the Man U players. Was Phil Jones there at that point? I can't remember. But there's someone with their shirt off, I remember, celebrating.
Phil Jones, yeah. I think he must have been,
And then suddenly they get word that...
They're waiting for the trophy, essentially, to be presented to them.
And you know, a lot of Sunderland fans have stayed behind to watch the United fans. And so there's a lot of United ill feeling towards Sunderland, because Sunderland fans were pretty... unpleasant to them after they'd lost. So you're mocking them.
I'm sure.
And that's also something I was worried about, is if City do throw it away, it's going to be really nasty. It's going to be nasty here. It's going to be nasty in town, and we're going to want to get away quite quickly if we're the ones who do it to them. So in that way, I was also a bit relieved.
Yeah, sure. But there's a moment where, I forget, and this was Clint Hill saying on a Ramble Meets a number of years ago, where I can't remember if it was him or he was on the floor, or he was speaking to another player who was on the floor. When that goal goes in, you see a few QPR players just drop, and they think, "Oh, we've messed it up."
Yeah, I think Nedim Manua's like banging on the ground, like, "I can't believe we've thrown that away."
But one of the players was obviously, whether it was in the celebration, had seen the reaction, or had got word, and actually went around and went, "No, so we're okay."
Yeah,
John
because
Waters has done us a solid.
I think some of the players must have realised when the QPR fans celebrated out of context that something must have happened to go their way. And I think sometimes word does get around on the bench as well, because I'm sure the subs are on their phone.
But I don't think for a second that influenced what happened in that last goal, because you see the commitment and the bodies being thrown in the way and all the rest of it.
And also, it would have been amazing scalp.
Of course.
Actually, you'd be talking about it, wouldn't you?
But, and also, you know, how would you rather stay up? Off your own bat, having got the draw you need, or because John Waters has done you a favour?
And also, you know, I guess QPR have also been relegated in, you know, talking about how would you rather go down. QPR got relegated at Reading, and it was a 0-0. And both sides went down. It was one of the worst games of football, I think, potentially in the history of the Premier League. And both sides were sort of laughing a little bit. And you just think, actually, that's kind of disrespectful and depressing. At least with this, if they were going to go down, they were going down as part of history. They were going down with a fight. Mm. Whereas, you know...
Oh, and yeah, you know, United fan could turn around to QPR and say...
You didn't give it a go. Yeah, exactly.
A phenomenal end to an intriguing Premier League season. And Flo, it's been a pleasure talking to you about that one.
I've actually also got another funny anecdote.
I
hope it's funny, and that's going to be a bit embarrassing. But after kind of the security guards parted, a lot of fans started swapping scarves. It's kind of like, oh, this is a bit friendly. Anyway, so my brother gave away his really nice QPR scarf. And at the time, we'd just changed our badge to this horrible, like, kind of Italian restaurant badge. And then, so he gave away his really nice scarf with the old old badge on it, and what he got back with was a City Hamburg half and half scarf, and he was a bit disappointed at that. But it was a nice gesture anyway. So somewhere in my mum's house is a City Hamburg half and half scarf.
Shared joy. Shared joy. Well, nice one, Flo. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Greatest Games on Football Ramble Day in association with The Blizzard. Of course, check out theblizzard.co.uk. Jonathan, pleasure as always, my good man.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Aguero looking for the 1-2. Balotelli drops. Aguero, he can win it. Oh, he's won the title, surely, for Manchester City. An unbelievable finish. 2 goals in stoppage time. Has the title ever been won more dramatically than that? Who is writing this stuff?
This was a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.